Second page at the bottom, the last source is a Tosefta, is a Tosefta in Brachot. Now, Tosefta is like the Mishnah. It's like the Mishnah in terms of its authority and the way we look at it. We don't differentiate between a Mishnah and a Tosefta. The Mishnah was compiled by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, as we know, and the Tosefta was compiled by Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia are credited with compiling the Tosefta. But the important thing to remember, it's the thought process that existed at the time of the Tanaim, right, which is like the before, as far as we're concerned, it's pretty much the beginning of things. We don't have much information before Tanaim, like written, I mean, between the Tanakh and the Tanaim, there's a kind of a lacuna, you know. We don't know exactly what they were thinking, but we know at that time, if you look at the end, this Tosefta, this is like a Mishnah, right? So it's Perek Dalet, Mishnah Yud Zayin, as you could see. But the end of it, the end of the Tosefta, this particular Tosefta says, Yelamdenu Rabbeinu. You see, it's at the end of the third line. Amar Lahem, right, somebody was learning, and he said, Mipnei Mazacha Yehuda Lemalchut. Mipnei Mazacha Yehuda Lemalchut. How did Yehuda become the candidate for kingship? Now, when did Yehuda become a candidate for kingship? Yehuda became a candidate for kingship in next week's parasha. When in next week's parasha? Well, if you look above, if you look at the section above, you see that Yaakov decided to bless his children. Right, do you remember from last year? Do you remember? It's the same parasha. He decided to bless his children. So, in any event, you remember how it went. Rachel, Yaakov's wife, had four children. First, she had four children. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Those were... What?
Leah had
his first.
Leah.
I'm sorry, Leah. Hi, we're listening. Yeah. You're awake. Good. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Yehuda, according to Rashi, was extra. That's why she called him Yehuda. Yehuda connected to the Hebrew word lehodot, to be thankful. Why was she thankful? According to Rashi, because Yaakov had four wives, so she knew that he was supposed to have 12 children, 12 tribes, 12 sons, 12 tribes.
But did she know that he would have four wives?
Did she know?
At the time he only had two.
When
Yehuda was born.
No, I don't know. I don't know about that. Let's not get into that. That's a
that's a different.
Leah said, my husband is going to have 12 sons, and he has four wives. That means that each wife should contribute three, right? So when she had her fourth son, she said, "It's extra. I'm getting something extra." So when Yaakov came to bless his children in next week's parasha, he said, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, they're no good. Yehuda, he's terrific. If you look at the pasuk, about Yehuda, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, see pasuk 9, Tet, Pasuk Tet. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Viterif Bini Alita, Kara Ravatz Ka'aryeh Kulavi Miyikimenu. This comparison of Yehuda to a lion, right? Lions are for some reason called kings, right? They're the kings of the animal kingdom. And so the comparison that Yaakov makes again and again to lions has to do with the fact that Yehuda had this quality of kingship in him. But if you look at the next pasuk, right, pasuk Yud, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda. A shevet is a staff. A shevet is a staff that you use to beat with, right, to establish authority. If you remember when you used to go to movies, right, and had a movie about some court, right, so the king always had a staff. Not because he had trouble walking, but because the staff symbolized authority and power, and so the king could take his staff and just point at somebody, and the people there would, you know, kill that somebody on the spot. So the staff is power. The staff is power. So Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda means that the authority of kingship will not disappear from Yehuda. Okay, it will not disappear from Yehuda. Rashi, you see Rashi in Pasuk Yud? Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda Mi David Va'elach. Which means, I mean, like Rashi wants to fix it. Right? He wants to fix a problem. What's the problem? The problem is Shaul HaMelech. Right, that there was a king before David HaMelech who was not of the tribe of Yehuda. His name was Shaul. Right, so Rashi just fixes it. He says, when Yaakov said, Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda, Shevet Mi Yehuda, Yaakov meant from David HaMelech and on. Right, what about David HaMelech? What about Shaul HaMelech? Huh? You have to learn the Ramban. The Ramban in Vayichi deals with that question at length in a most interesting manner, I would say. So, if you look at the Rashi,
the language of Lo Yasur is once there's a king from Yehuda, then Lo Yasur forever.
Okay. But if the king should come from the tribe of Yehuda, why did it come from the tribe of Binyamin? I mean, what was the... why did I need Shaul HaMelech? I mean, you are right that technically you might be able to dray it into the Pasuk.
Right.
But it's certainly not an obvious dray. For example, if the first king of Israel was David HaMelech, you wouldn't have any problem with that. Right, so that remains a problem. The second clause in the pasuk is mechokek mibein raglav. So mechokek, again, all these words, you know, words in the Chumash, it's very difficult to know, for me, to know what they meant 3,000 years ago. Right, but we are influenced by the reality that we live in. So a mechokek is a legislature. Mechokek mibein raglav. What mibein raglav? From between my legs, his legs. I don't know what that means, but mechokek seems to go along with being a king. That the king had legislative powers. The king of Israel, halacha, right, had legislative powers. He could establish a rule, a regulation. He could demand income tax for whatever it was he was doing with his life. So here, Michokek Mibein Raglav, Rashi says, I'm sorry, let's go back. Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda Mi David Ve'elach, Elu Rashi Galuyot Shebebavel, Shirodim Et Ha'am B'Shevet. He says, the references to Rashi Galuyot, there were these people in the, in English they call it exilarch, which is a good word, doesn't mean anything, but it shows some sort of awareness of things. So we'll say exilarch. Exilarch in Hebrew, Roshei Gola, that in Bavel, after the exile of the Jews from Eretz Yisrael, and the community in Bavel somehow established itself as a Jewish community and maintained. I mean, it's not so obvious how they did that, because you remember when the 10 tribes were exiled, that when the Assyrians exiled the 10 tribes from Eretz Yisrael, they seem to have disappeared. They were not able to create an independent reality for themselves. And they must have all assimilated first into the Babylonian world and then into the Persian world. They disappeared. But the second exile, somehow, it worked. So when it says, the question that Rashi says is Lo Yasur. Rashi says, what do you mean Lo Yasur? There was an exile. There were no kings after Tzidkiyahu. That was the end of... So Rashi says, Elu Rashi Galuyot. What does the pasuk refer to? What is Yaakov saying? Excuse me. It's annoying. But it annoys me more than it annoys you. So Rashi says, Rashi explains, Lo Yasur. They won't disappear. They will always be. What do you mean they'll always be? So Rashi says, Eilu Rashi Galo Yotche Bebabel. The authority was passed to, in Bavel, to members of the tribe of Yehuda, who acted as Rashei Galuyot. They were the exilarchs. Shirodim et ha'am b'shevet. They punish the people with the staff. Shem memunim al pi hamalchut. Memunim al pi hamalchut. I don't know what Rashi means. It was these people had power that was given to them by the people in charge, like the Persians. The Persians were in charge. And the example is, of course, Nehemiah. Remember Nehemiah? Ezra, Nehemiah. So Nehemiah was a Persian bureaucrat. And he received permission as a Persian bureaucrat to go to Eretz Yisrael when the Jews returned there. Some of the Jews, not all of the Jews, but Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael, and they wanted to build the wall around Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. But they needed somebody who had administrative knowledge and who was respected by the Persian government. And that person was Nehemiah, who came to Eretz Yisrael and stayed there, I think, for 12 years while this was being done. And then he went back to Persia. He, Nehemiah, went back to Persia. You call him either an unsuccessful aliyah or a successful bureaucrat. It was, he always worked for the Persians. He didn't, even though we think of him as going with Ezra. Ezra came on Aliyah and stayed, and he fixed the religious authority in Yerushalayim. Nehemiah was a different story. So that's the Rashei Hagola, right? Then the pasuk says, "Mechokek mibein raglav." Mechokek, we understand what that is. Mibein raglav is not so clear. But Rashi says, Talmidim u'mechokekim. Right? Shevet. The one with the shevet is like the person in charge. And then there are mechokek mibein raglav. Rashi says, Talmidim. They're the students. They're the people who learn Torah. Elu nisiyei Eretz Yisrael. So they were also nisiyim in Eretz Yisrael, but until the centers in Eretz Yisrael disappeared. It all disappeared, right? It moved westward. It was the Babel closed down and Eretz Yisrael closed down. Eretz Yisrael closed before Babel closed, right? The Talmud Yerushalmi, which was written in Eretz Yisrael, was the Talmud that ended with Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish, maybe another generation. Whereas in Babel, it went on up until Ravina and Ravashi. And then the centers, they were centers in Eretz Yisrael and Babel, but the centers moved North Africa, Spain, and eventually, much later, to France and Germany. Right? It was like, it went where the Jews could go, right? They went that way. There was nothing east. They were going to go to China, so they went to Spain, North Africa, Spain, Italy, and eventually to Germany and France. So this is Mechokek Ribein Raglav. And then you have this clause. If you look at the pasuk, Ad Ki Yavo Shilo, mystery. Ad Ki Yavo Shilo. That's what it says in the pasuk. Until Shilo. Until Shiloh. What is Shiloh? So we don't know. But Rashi says, Ad ki yavo Shiloh, melech ha-mashiach shamlucha Shiloh. In other words, the malchut of Yehuda is going to be superseded by the malchut of melech ha-mashiach. Right? The Messiah. I don't know what Messiah means in English, but Mashiach means somebody who's anointed. Right? Who is anointed? Who is anointed? L'halacha.
King.
No. A king whose father was not a king. In other words, if David HaMelech was anointed, his father was not a king. Right? His children, or Shlomo HaMelech, is not going to be anointed. He gets it automatically. It's only the first in the line that has to be anointed. So he's called Melech HaMashiach. We don't know who Melech HaMashiach is, but he's anointed. It means he's not the son of. He's something special that happens in the world, right? Something special. Shehamelucha Shalom. Shamlucha Shiloh, who has kingship. V'chein tirgeim unkelus u'medrash agadah. And Rashi, this whole problem of two explanations in Rashi has to be also thought about. Like, why? When does Rashi do that? Well, why bring two explanations? If the first, they used to say, the first one is not so good, so you have the second one. The second one is not so good, so you have the first one. Okay. I mean, that's not so rewarding. So you'd like it to be a little more tight. So Rashi says, Medrash Agadah, Shi or Shai Lo. Two words. Not Shi Lo, but Shai Lo. Shineemar Yovilu Shai Lamora. That the one who has authority will get the gift. Will be given a gift. So you see from these psukim, that Yehuda, we understand, and we can't go through it now, but maybe next week. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi were rejected, as though to say, Reuven, he should have gotten it because he was the firstborn. Right? But he did a bad thing, we're not going to give it to Reuven. Shimon and Levi, they should have gotten it because they're next in line. But they also did a bad thing. They also did a bad thing. Yehuda, he's going to get it because he's in the next in line. And the question is, what did Yehuda do? What did Yehuda do? So we go back to that Tosefta, right, the last line in the Tosefta, Amar Lahem, Vipnei Mazacha Yehuda Lemalchut. You see, there it is. That's the question. It was at the time of the Tanaim. That's what I meant to say. At the time of the Tanaim, this was a question. They couldn't understand, like, what it was. I understand that we got up to Yehuda because we rejected Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. But apparently, the Chachamim thought Yehuda was no greater tzaddik either. So, what was it that he did which was so impressive that he received Malchut? So, the answer in the Tosefta, Mipnei Shehoda B'Tamar. Hoda. Hoda is like the word Hodayah. I said that Rashi said that the reason that Leah called him Yehuda was that she was especially thankful because she had a fourth child, a fourth son. And she was thankful for that, so she called him Yehuda. Here it says in the Sefer, Mesha Hoda B'Tamar. In other words, this feature became part of the nature of Yehuda. He was a person who was willing to admit to be thankful or to admit that he did something wrong. And so he admitted that he was mistaken in the story of Tamar. Story of Tamar in the parasha of Vayeshev. In fact, Yehuda said, Tzadka mimeni. She is right and I am wrong. And this was a remarkable thing, the remarkable thing for a person who is guaranteed power. Right? You're going to get the power, you're going to be the king. Why are you going to be the king? Because you have humility. There's humility in you. Like it's in your, in the way you are. Right? You are a person who admits that he did something wrong. And that was a remarkable thing. That's the position of the Tosefta. But it's not the only position that we could adopt. If you look at the first, now we get to side one of the sheet. Side one of the sheet is an interesting conversation that takes place between Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda and Yosef, the Pasuk says this, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Vayomer bi Adoni, Yedaberna abdecha davar baznei Adoni, vayichar abcha ba'avdecha, ki kamocha keparo. So you know that Rashi looks at the Pasuk as a series of clauses. And he's willing to try to explain each of these clauses. But the fact of the matter is that somehow everything in the world changes in this conversation between Yehuda and Yosef. Now Yosef, as Yehuda admits, is the Melech. The Melech decides. He creates the law, the rule. Yosef was given the authority to create the rules at that time. And the fact that Yehuda is talking to him, he's initiating a conversation, is itself pretty interesting. Now, what comes before that, for some reason, he printed up in a strange way. You see, it says Memhei. Towards the bottom of the psukim, right? So there's a confrontation between Yosef and his brothers. The brothers don't know that Yosef is Yosef. They think he's an Egyptian guy who runs the show, and he has this quality of malchut. And what we said was that Malchut means you can do whatever you want. You're not bound by the limits of some higher authority, of law, which is what the Malchut of Am Yisrael, or the Torah, tried to describe Malchut as the person who is in charge, but he has to accept the authority of the Torah, which is different than other Malchuyot, where there was no higher authority. The problem with the Jews was in our history that we were not able generally to live up to that standard. We were not able to live up to that, and that's why the corruption at the top produced corruption throughout the nation, and that corruption is generally called Avodah Zarah. Right? Because we don't recognize one of the aspects of Avodah Zarah is that it doesn't recognize the rule of Torah. Right? Whereas the Torah said, recognize the rule of Torah and you could have a king. You have a king, it would be good to have a king. But if the king denies the rule of Torah, the Chazal say that the king was directed to wear a Sefer Torah on his arm when he went out to fight for Am Yisrael, to make sure that he realizes that he was not like the unique fighter or the person who was going to win the battle, but that he had to accept the authority of a Kodesh Baruch. So look here at this pasuk. Lo yechol Yosef litapek lekol hanitzavim alav. They were all there having a little dinner together, Yosef, some Egyptians, the brothers, and then it says, Lo yechol Yosef litapek lekol hanitzavim. Nitzavim, the people who are, the assemblage. So Rashi doesn't understand why Yosef lo yechol lidapek. Like, what exactly was it that Yosef was unable to do or to control himself? So Rashi says lo yechol Yosef lidapek lechol anisabim. You see it? It's sort of the last third of Rashi. Lo haya yechol lisbol, he could not suffer sheyu mitzrim nitzavim alav v'shomim she'echav mitbayshim behoda'o lahem. He says he lo yechol itapek, there was something he couldn't stand it. Couldn't stand that the Egyptians who were there, you know, eating with Yosef, would think that the brothers were kind of being oppressed by Yosef in some way or other. So then he says, then Rashi says, Pasuk Bet, Vayitenit kolo bevichi, Vayishmu Mitzrayim, Vayishma Beit Paro, and he started crying. And everybody heard him crying. Vayishma Beit Paro, and it was heard certainly in the house of Paro. Rashi, Beito shel Paro, the house of Paro, Klobar, Avadav ubnei Beito, his servants and the people who drayed around at his house. Ve'ein ze lashon bayit mamash, ela kimo Beit Yisrael. It doesn't mean a house, a building, but it means the family of, the nation of, the community of. That's what bayit means, right? Beit Yehuda. Zero. Now we go to Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Yosef el Achav, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, V'lo Yechlu Echav La'anot Oto, Ki Nifhalu Mipanav. Ki Nifhalu Mipanav. Nifhalu Mipanav, Rashi says, Mipnei Habusha. Alright, you could try to figure out what that Mipusha means. They were embarrassed. They were embarrassed. So, like you could say, what language did Yosef inform his brothers that he was Yosef? Right? I guess it was, in order to, if the issue at that moment was establishing the honor of the brothers in the face of the Egyptians who were in the room. So certainly Yosef would tell them that he's their brother Yosef in Hebrew, in the language that they all understood. And he wouldn't have to depend on the on these guys, right? Pasuk, the next pasuk is at the end of this section in the Chumash. Vayipol al tzavarei Binyamin achiv vayevk ubinyanim bacha al tzavarav. So he cried and Binyamin's cried al tzavarav al tzavarav. Rashi says vayipol al tzavarei, plural, Binyamin tzavarei, and it's his neck. I mean, that's how you like kiss somebody. You fall on their neck. You know, I'm talking about polite kissing. And so Rashi says, why is it the plural? Al shtei mikdashot shatidim liyot b'chalko shel Binyamin b'sofan lecharev. But you know that if you imagine the map of Israel and you imagine Yerushalayim as a line, horizontal line, you know, going from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean, then that's the Beit HaMikdash, where the bottom from that line and down is the tribe of Yehuda. And from that line up a little bit, very small area, was the tribe of Binyamin. So the Kodesh Kodashim, so this line, Yerushalayim, went through the Beit HaMikdash. And the Kodesh Kodashim was in the territory of Binyamin. And the rest of the Beit HaMikdash was in the territory of Yehuda. So what Rashi is saying is that the reason Savarav is plural in all of these cases, because it represents the fact that there were two Batei Mikdash who were destroyed in the in Savarei Binyamin, in the throats of Binyamin. Pasuk Tetvav. Yosef. Vakol nishma beit paro lemor bavachei Yosef. Everybody knew about this. Vaitav be'enei paro be'enei avadav. I mean, paro is hard to imagine that paro really cared about achei Yosef one way or the other, but it was in Paro's interest that Yosef should function. Yosef was, after all, the chief moneymaker of the generation, and he was able to use his power effectively to have the king or the Kohanim of Egypt buy all of Egyptian land. I mean, they all became unimaginably rich because of Yosef. So Paro would not be inclined to get into a battle with Yosef about his brothers. I mean, after all, how much could the brothers cost them? So
well,
that's
like
they what?
If they're all like Yosef, then they would also be assets.
They, what?
If they are at all like Yosef, then they also could be assets to the.
That's where he's taking a step further. You know that. Yeah, that Paro was really thinking hard about it. So, in any event, this is what happened. Yosef told his brothers. Everybody knew it. Everybody understood it. Everybody said, and therefore, we could translate that event as Yosef's nakedness before his brothers. All of a sudden, Yosef, before this event, Yosef was by himself. He was unique. He was not. He was not part of an organization. This is something that was well known in the ancient world about like a Achashverosh. Achashverosh, I mean, pointed out by Chazal that Achashverosh was not the son of a king. Right? And because he wasn't the son of a king, he's called Achashverosh. He doesn't have a father in Megillat Esther. Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, hamolech mehodu v'ad kush, sheva me'asrim medina, that Yosef, Achashverosh, looked for a queen. Right, and who did he find? Who did he find? He found a girl from a family that had no power and had no legions, unlike his ex-wife, who he dispatched. But she apparently had support. She had people on her side. She may have been the queen of the previous king that was usurped by Achashverosh. So there's a certain advantage to, if you're working for the king, is a certain advantage to not having power, independent power, independent source, like being a politician. I mean, that's one of the things that democracy has more or less successfully dealt with, that, you know, you could be on the losing team and you still, it's still worth it to be on the team. You know, somehow. That's, I mean, Israel may prove that this is not the case, but so this story about Yosef telling his brothers who he really was, and that he was forced to do it, forced by something. He can't control himself. He couldn't bear it. Rashi says what Rashi says, but we can understand that. So this weakness in the malchut of Yosef is described in the psukim that we just learned. And as a result of that psukim, you have pasuk yudchet at the top of the column. But it says, Vayigash elav Yehuda, Vayome bi Adoni, Yedaberna avdecha davar bazne Adoni, Vayichabcha bavdecha, ki kamocha ki paro. You see all these clauses? Rashi says, Daber bazne Adoni, Yikansu devarai baznecha. You don't talk like that to a king. You don't say to a king, okay, I hope you understand what I'm saying. Which could be understood as saying, what I'm saying is a little too hard for you to understand. That's not what he meant. He meant it almost as a prayer, as a silent prayer, and he could have said it to himself. And then Rashi says, Al yichar apcha, right? Me kan atal lameid shediber elav kashot. So you see, Rashi's got it. Rashi's got it. From this you learn that Yehuda spoke to Yosef in a harsh tone. He was really angry. Now, you don't do that. But it's only after Yosef exposed himself, said, I'm your brother. And since I'm your brother, I mean, he says it later on, he says, since I'm your brother, I'm not going to kill you, I'm not going to punish you, I'm not going to do anything too terrible to you. So that means he limited his power over his family. And then Yehuda comes and says, I want to tell you something. I have harsh words to tell you. And then Rashi goes on and says, Ki kamocha kiparo. You see the Rashi? Chashuv ata beinai kemelech ze pishuto. That Yehuda said to Yosef, said to Yeki, Vayom ebi Adoni edaber na avdecha davar vasnei Adoni. Right? And Rashi says at the end, says, Ki kamocha kiparo. Ki kamocha kiparo. You are like Paro. Chashuv ata beinai kemelech zepshuto. Can you imagine a simple person is standing before the king and says to him, I recognize that you're the king. That itself is an abrogation of the power of the king. It's like you say, you think, you're not sure if I like you? I like you. I mean, you don't talk that way to a king. You don't go to the president and say, oh, you know, I didn't vote for you, but I like you. You don't usually say something like that. So this is also because Yehuda felt that he had the upper hand. Zeh pshuto, Rashi says, Medrash show, the second interpretation. Sovcha lilkot alav b'tzarat. You're going to end up and afflicted by some sort of leprosy. Kimo shelaka paro al yedei ziknati tzara al leila achat sheikva. Right, you remember the story with the king of Egypt and Sarah, and that. So he says, it's like Yehuda says, Ki kamocha paro. I mean, Paro wasn't the master of the world or the situation. You're not the master of the world either. So you see Yehuda's taking over. He's angry because Yosef wants them to bring the father and not going to let him return with Binyamin. He's angry, but in order to be angry at a king, in order to be able to do that, you have to demote the king. You have to make sure that they... So Rashi says, Ki kamocha kaparo, means two things are the opposite of each other. Just like Paro, so to you. Just like power, so you have power. Just like Paro has power, I won't ever do anything to upset you. That's one interpretation. The other interpretation is the opposite. Ki kamocha kaparo, just like Paro took it, had to take to suffer God's wrath. Paro had to suffer God's wrath. So you're also going to have to suffer God's wrath. That's what the Yehuda says to. So then he goes on. Now he goes on with the content. He says, Adoni, Sha'alet Avadav Lemor, you asked your people, Ayesh Lechem Avo Ach. Do you have a father? Do you have a brother? V'nomar el Adoni, yesh lanu av zaken, v'yelet zekunim katan. We have an old father, and we have a younger brother. V'achiv meit, and we have one brother died. V'yivater hu levado l'imo, v'aviv ahevo. And he became the only son for this young one. The only child of his mother, and his father loved him. Right? Remember Yosef Ketonet Pasim. Look at the pasuk kaf in the Rashi, where Rashi explains Achiv Meit, his brother died. Mivnei Hayirah Hayamotzi Devar Sheker Mipiv Amar Imo Malo Shehu Kayam. Yomar Havi Uhu Etzli. So he says, he's telling the story. He's saying the story was that we came and we said, one of the brothers died. That was Yosef. There's a brother, you know, because his father, the father Yaakov, when he saw the coat with the blood on it, he said, Tarof Taraf Yosef, that some animal must have gotten to him and destroyed him. Okay, so in any event, I mean, we could go through this. We go through this a little bit more. There's one more thing I wanted to tell you. You see, from the way the story is told, just by reading the story with Rashi, that Yehuda stood up to the malchut of Yosef, diminished it, and established a kind of parity with Yosef and the kingship of Yosef, which was in itself a remarkable thing to do, but it helps to understand how Yehuda was chosen. The Tosefta that we saw, the Tosefta in Brachot, says that Yehuda was chosen because he had personal qualities that were very important for a king. And that personal quality was that he was connected to the truth. He was able to admit that he had done to Tamar what she said he had done. And certainly, if he had denied it, even though she had stuff that belonged to him, you could say, well, he lost it, she found it. I mean, you could say whatever you say. He didn't go down that path. He went down the path that said, there's a truth, this is obviously the truth, and I'm willing to admit it. The second thing that Yehuda, the second reason that we saw that Yehuda became the king in Israel was because he displayed kingship. He was the king when he stood up against Yosef. He was not afraid to diminish the authority of Yosef in the face of what happened with all the others. So you have these two ideas. Now there's a third idea in the pre-tzaddik that is printed on the page. This, by the way, the new thing is they're printing very all these books that used to be in my generation. You had to work very hard to read them. The printing was not so good, and there were no references. You had to find all the references on your own if you're interested. Today, there are all kinds of companies that are printing those books in very reasonable ways. So this is the pre-tzaddik on Breishit. All you have to do is find one guy who knows everything that Rav Sodok wrote Baal Peh, and he can write all the references, and then you print it, and it's terrific. For people like me, well, you don't have to look it up because it's right there. So it's the two books that I saw recently are the Pre-Tzaddik, but only Breishit. And the first three volumes of the Likutei Halachos, these are books that I like, the Likutei Halachot of Rav Nosson. It also came out, the first three volumes, but it must be at least 10 volumes that will come out eventually. But it's very good. It's very good. You can learn it, and it's right there. It's remarkable. So look at what it says here. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. You see, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, B'medrash Rabbah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hagasha Milchama. The word Vayigash. Vayigash is an active verb. He did something. So the Medrash says, what did he do? Well, you don't have the Vayigash, like he walked two steps closer to Yosef. He didn't do anything. That's what you do when you speak to somebody. You look for a little privacy. So he says, Hagasha Milchama, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hagasha Milchama, Rabbi Nosson Omer, Hagasha lepiyus. So one says he prepared himself for war, and the other was he prepared himself for piyus. Piyus is a peaceful resolution. Rabbanon amru hagasha letfila, and Rabbanon said no. He prepared himself to daven. He prepared himself to daven. This is a quote of the Medrash. Rabbi Lozo Omer. Pashat lahon, aim la milchama, im la milchama aniba, im la piyus aniba, im la tefila aniba. There's another version of saying it that Yehuda said, if he wants war, I'm ready for war. If he wants peace, I'm ready for peace. If he wants the daven, or if davening is the solution, I'll daven. Hine bi Yaakov, im Esav, ita. He says, obviously, Yehuda learned this from his father, because when Yaakov came back to Eretz Yisrael and he was going to confront Esav, so he prepared himself, Doron, Milchama, and Tfila, all three. However, Achshav Doron Tfila. Niskar Katub. But there, Doron, the presents that he brought for Esav, and Tefillah, the Tefillah that he was going to make, Niskar Katub. Umilchama Nirmaz Bamesh Ne'emar Vaya Machaneh Nishar Lepleita. He says Pius and Tefillah are mentioned beferush, and Milchama is also mentioned in a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Vaya Machaneh Nishar Lepleita." He says, "I'll set it up so that if he comes, he Esav comes to attack one part of my party, so the other ones will be able to run away." So that's a statement about war. So even though it doesn't say war b'feirush, it implies war. V'lo utzrach lo. V'lo utzrach lo v'lechein lo nizkira. That the war doesn't have to be mentioned b'feirush because it's implied. Masha ein ken kan. He says, but here it's different. Shenizkarak divrei pius. Over milchama yechol liyot shebeim lo haya mitpayes haya nilcham. So he says here it's only pius, like it's like Yehuda is trying to talk to Yosef and convince him of something. That's pius. So you could say that maybe milchama is implied, because he says, you know, if you make peace with me, so then everything is great. That implies that if you don't make peace with me, so there'll be a war. However, aval tefillah lo huzkar kan klal. Interesting. We're talking about Yehuda, right? So Yehuda's preparing himself. So the pre-tzaddik says, Rav Tzadok says, Yehuda prepared himself for pius, and he prepared himself by implication for tefillah. For milchama. But why doesn't it say anything about tefillah? After all, Yehuda learned this course of action from his father. And his father certainly said that he's going to daven. And he davened. The question. So then he says, Amarnu shu al pi ma shekatuv Ma'or Enayim b'Nechemia. Nechemia's name of a book of the Tanakh. Hello. No, Ezra Nechemia, it's really it's worth it. It's worth it. Very interesting, Ezra Nechemia. The books of Ezra Nechemia. And they're smaller than you think they are, because they have like lists of names. You can skip that. It's worth it. Tichtiv et palel el Elohei Hashamayim. I will daven to the God of heaven. Vomer lemelech. And then I'll go back and speak to the king. Velo huskar tfilato. Velo huskar tfilato. Nechemi says, I'm going to daven. But he doesn't say that he davened. All it says is, and then he's talking about his plan. He said, I'm going to daven. But it doesn't say that he went to daven. So how come? Agav doesn't say he went to daven. So the period should varav should debel the melech nitkaven belibo litfilah. The words that he used when he spoke to the king, that I'm going to daven. So belibo litfilah la Hashem yitbarach. He was davening at that the same time. Vamelech hayasavu she'elav medaber. He was really davening. It's just the king of Persia thought that he was davening, that he was talking to him.
King of Egypt.
He's the king. He's the one he's talking to. And so he said the Ma'ariv Naim also wrote, you know, history of the Jewish people. The Ma'ariv Naim said that we're talking about that the king thought he was talking about Elav Medaber, but he was really talking to God. V'chein yesh lefaresh kan. V'chein yesh lefaresh kan. So that, according to the pre-tzaddik, another quality that Yehuda had was that he davened. That was a davening at some level. It's a statement about your status, that your status before God is lesser. You're not a big shot where you talk to God. So this is the Pritzadik. The Pritzadik goes through this idea of davening without a sitter. You know, people daven. They talk to God. I mean, that's what davening is. And so Yehuda spoke to God, and he knows that because he decided that speaking to God doesn't have a text. Doesn't have a text. And since Yehuda was interested in protecting himself from the anger that Yosef might have had, so he had again this quality of keeping in mind that God is in charge of the world, and that kingship doesn't mean that you take over for God. But kingship just means, not just, kingship means that you have certain kinds of authority, but you don't have ultimate authority. So we saw that Yehuda, you could look at Yehuda in a variety of ways, right? In the Tosefta, Yehuda is the one who admitted it. He admitted it to Tamar, to the people who were there. He was connected to the truth. In the beginning of the parasha of Vayigash, the Torah teaches us that Yehuda did not accept the malchus of Yosef. Right? I mean, there was a series of events that took place, but he did not accept the malchus of Yosef. And the third thing that we see is that Yehuda davened, because that's what he was doing when he was talking. What it seemed to Yosef, perhaps, that he was talking to Yosef, he was really davening. So those are the qualities that enabled Yehuda to be chosen for kingship in Israel. Oh, good. Have a good Shabbos.